From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, this is Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. Today, we're having as our guest our national president, Brian Wagner. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Bob. How are you today?
I'm doing great. And we're going to share a lot of good news and a lot of information with our members out there who are listening. First, I just want to bring everyone up to date on the status of members of the Board of Governors and the Postal Regulatory Commission. Last week, on August 8th, the United States Senate confirmed the nominations of three new members to the Postal Board of Governors: Ron Blum, Ramon Martinez IV, and John Barger. Now, additionally, the United States Senate confirmed the nominations of two new members to the Postal Regulatory Commission, both veterans of the United States Senate staff, and they are Ann Fisher, who worked for Senator Susan Collins, Senator Thad Cochran. Additionally, Ashley Poling also was confirmed, and she worked for Senators John Tester, Heidi Heitkamp, and Gary Peters. So we have a lot of experience on the Postal Regulatory Commission. We have three new folks who have financial services experiences on the Board of Governors, Brian. How do you sort of take it now that we're going to, for the first time since 2014, we'll have a working quorum on the Postal Board of Governors?
Well, I think it's great. I think anytime you can have a team there to help direct the Postal Service to be successful and help guide the Postal Service, I think it's to benefit all of us.
Let's pivot a little bit. Now, I know a lot of our members are paying very close attention to a lawsuit that was filed 2 weeks ago by the National Association of Postal Supervisors against the United States Postal Service, and our charge against the Postal Service, which will be litigated in the United States District Court over here in Washington, is whether or not the Postal Service violated current law in the conduct of consultation with regard to pay talks. And as a former congressional staff person, one of the banes of my existence on the Hill was writing committee reports, explaining what a bill means. So what I did was I went back to the committee report that accompanied the legislation that created fact-finding, and I want to get your reaction to a couple of comments or explanations made by committee staff and the members of the committee that actually enacted this legislation. The first is particularly concerning the degree of consultations in the determination of pay schedules and fringe benefits. The legislation, or the committee report accompanying the legislation, wanted to make a distinction between low-level consultations or talks and active participation. And I'm going to read verbatim from the committee report. The committee, and this is the Senate Governmental Affairs Committee, has weighed very carefully the difference between participation and consultation in the development of employment programs for supervisory and administrative employees. For employees who are truly part of management of the government, those are high-level managers, the argument that consultation is all that is either necessary or desirable may have some validity. But employees in the lower levels of supervision or administration in the Postal Service are not sufficiently separated from the nature of employment of those whom they supervise to justify withholding from them some degree of active representation in the development of employment programs which affect and, in fact, control their livelihood. The supervisor on the workroom is an integral part of the postal delivery system. To deprive him of active, and I underscore that, active voice through his chosen representatives, in this case the National Association of Postal Supervisors, in the development of programs affecting him would be unfair to him and not in the best interest of the Postal Service. Brian, now, with regard to the lawsuit, how do you think this intent of Congress sort of plays into the lawsuit that's been filed against the Postal Service?
I think it's always been a challenge to kind to balance or define what is consultation and direct participation. And I think what NAPS has done is looked closer, more comprehensive into Title 39, the law, the Postal Reorganization Act, and trying to define what our role is as a NAPS organization. And consultation isn't just meet with NAPS, get our input, and say, thank you very much, but this is what we're going to do. Direct participation is us being involved in the development of programs and how they're going to impact our members. And I think that's one of the biggest things here, where we're just handed a pay package, we give input, and the post office is to, quote, give us full and fair consideration, and then they give us their answer. And it's not a, what I call, true direct participation in building from the start to the end.
How would you envision a true constructive active participation on the part of NAPS for development to take place? What would be the sort of architecture of such a active participation in consultations?
Well, I think we go back to what the post office or our fact-finding panel recommended as a work group to be able to develop a program. But this work group just isn't between the Postal Service and NAPS. What the fact-finding panel recommended is that we have a mediator or a pay compensation expert to look at, again, the law, how Title 39 is supposed to represent the fact that our pay is supposed to be comparable to the private sector, a differential of the people we supervise is fair and reasonable, a pay package that can attract and retain, and that also provides for a well-motivated workforce. So from the start, we need to sit down and look at what would a true pay-for-performance system or a pay package, not just a pay-for-performance system, but a pay package for EASB, and how will that meet the requirements of the law.
You mentioned these experts, that we're seeking expert to participate in the process of consultations. Again, I go back to the committee report that was filed back in 1980. This is a 40, folks out there should understand, this is a 40-year-old law that probably, and I'm saying not probably, that must be modernized to comport with the current managerial relationship between supervisors and postal headquarters. And that's something with regard to legislative reform. But we're talking about a court action right now. So, but I'm going to go back to the committee report where the committee writes, while the committee intends that standards be set by recognized experts, not one expert, but experts in compensation. At the same time, it does recommend that the panel take into consideration, but not be limited to, cost of living, number one, comparability, number two, and number three is the ability of the Postal Service to pay. These are three major issues that are to be considered with regard to pay talks, pay consultations, and within the fact-finding process. And I want to touch first on that concept of experts. Now, I understand the Postal Service brought in someone who was so knowledgeable, let's say, in certain pay issues. But was that individual an expert in the compensation, particularly the Postal Service?
Well, the Postal Service brought in what they called their witness expert, and we had our witness expert on pay. But I think what the law says there, Bob, is the fact that the Postal Service is really supposed to get a unbiased expert to come in and do what they call a pay comparability of the market, of the private sector. And the Post Office has not done that. And even the Postal Service's pay expert that they brought in testified during our fact-finding hearing that it should be done every 2 to 3 years, and the Post Office hasn't done that. So the Post Office came up with a pay decision for NAPS, but not using any experts to develop it, you know, and then it was after the fact they brought in a pay comp expert, and then that person said basically they've never seen a pay-for-performance system like the Postal Service in all the years that they deal with pay-for-performance in the private sector, and the average pay was about 3% in the private sector, and our members haven't been receiving that.
So let me get back to this. So this pay expert that was brought in by the Postal Service, and he was the Postal Service's witness, indicated that the Postal Service had not conducted a pay study for the past 2 or 3 years, yet they were coming to the fact finders and suggesting a comparability analysis that at the very best was outdated.
Well, basically the Post Office hadn't done any pay comparability reports, and their expert said it should be done every 2 to 3 years, but the Post Office hadn't done one even since 2012 when we went to the first fact finding that we did.
So we're talking about something.
After the fact.
So we're talking about, to the extent there was any data, this data is set at the minimum 7 years old.
Correct.
Wow.
Right. So a lot has changed in 7 years, as we know, not only in the business market, but even on the legislative and the political side.
So the best case scenario for the Postal Service is maybe this data was comparable 7 years ago, possibly, or not.
Or not, because we even went to fact-finding back in 2012 because we felt that, again, the post office really didn't adhere to the law, and we went to fact-finding then. We really didn't feel it provided us what we needed. Again, we went to fact-finding. We got a decision from those panelists back in 2012. Here we are again in, you know, FY 2018, and we get a decision in May of 2019, and the panelists look at it and say, look, the post office's pay-for-performance system is seriously flawed. They need to address COLA, locality pay. The supervisor differential is complicated, and it needs to be recalculated. They notice that the pay-for-performance system isn't attracting and retaining qualified EAS, and it's not provided for a well-motivated workforce, an EAS workforce. And that's seen by the Postal Pulse results. No matter how the post office may want to spin a 1% increase in engagement from 25% to 26%, but EAS and postal employees are not taking the survey. The participation rate has dropped again.
So let's get back. There are a number of issues with regard to compensation that are in contention. Number one is cost of living, which could include locality pay.
Well, that to me would be cost of living and possibly both, or I guess you would take one or the other.
And then there's comparability to private sector.
That is correct.
And the third issue is this differential.
Correct. The supervisor differential for those you supervise. Now, we know going back, again, in 1974, Knapp sued the post office with regard to that PTAC ruling and the differential.
PTAC. What does PTAC stand for?
I'll be honest with you. You caught me off guard on that. That was back 1974, when the Post Office Reorganization Act, it was something to do with jobs and whether they were craft jobs or EAS positions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they were different postal technician type of jobs. I couldn't really, I just go by the acronym. We're good at that at the post office.
At the Postal Service, we're wonderful with acronyms.
That would give somebody, hey, start Googling PTAC.
We're going to give, that's homework for some of our listeners to go find, to go let us know what that means.
But going back to 1974, Knapp sued the post office with regard to the differential. Judge Green ruled that the differential should be approximately 24%. The post office appealed and went on appeal, and the court said, well, the differential, the court can't decide what the differential should be percentage-wise. The post office has to make that decision. It has to be fair and reasonable. Post office came back and said, great, it's at 5%, but it's going to be based off of the most populated craft position of the largest union. At that time, was a level 5 clerk. Now it was today a level 6 clerk.
So some would argue that, you know, when they came back, although there was data to support a 24% differential, the Postal Service came back with 5%. I guess one can conclude that was a somewhat arbitrary number the Postal Service came up with.
I agree with that. They didn't even do an analysis that I know of. Now, again, back in the 1970s, but how do you go from 24% to 5% and say it's reasonable when a court ruled this way? So here we are today. We have the differential now. You have carriers who are the most popular. NALC is the largest union, and the most populated craft position now is the carriers, you know, the top carrier.
Mm-hmm.
So the differential should be based off of that position, and we don't believe 5% is reasonable. In the market, even the pay expert from the post office said it could be almost 15 to 20% of a differential from the people you supervise. Now, even in with EAS, managers and supervisors, we have situations where a manager of a station or a postmaster is making less money than their supervisor because of the way the structure is.
And also, does that include overtime?
No, well, because supervisors don't get overtime.
Right.
They get what they call tea time, straight time after 8.5 hours. So we've lost the overtime. NAPS members lost the COLA. We haven't had locality pay. And all of those, even if you don't look at in the private sector as managers getting overtime, you still have COLA, and you still have locality pay.
Now, interestingly, in the federal workforce and the postal workforce, postal managers are probably the only class of employees in the government that don't receive some type of incremental pay adjustment annually. For example, you know, within the postal world, letter carriers, clerks, mail handlers get annual increases in addition to cost of living adjustments.
And they're I guess contract increases also.
And contract increases, periodic contract increases. In the federal sector, even managers get locality pay and what's an ECI adjustment, which is sort of a comparability adjustment. They receive that. So the only mid-level managers who do not get annual increases or comparability adjustments or locality pay are folks within the postal world.
Right. EAS, you know, from the supervisor on up to the other managerial personnel and postmasters and managers. But here's what you're looking at. The post office puts out a pay-for-performance system as our pay increases. It is very subjective. We notice that many of our members, most of our members, don't have control of the goals. You work, and I've told this many times, I even told this to the Postmaster General. Our members are working, you know, 6 to 7 days a week, 10 to 12 hours a day. They work all year long. Guess what? They have no control of their goals, and at the end of the year, they realize, I didn't get a pay raise. And in fiscal year 2018, over 16,000 EAS didn't get a pay raise. The year before was about 6,100. FY16, they did pretty good, less than 100. But what we've seen is that the pay increases have been less. The private sector is getting, on average, 3%. Even the fact finders recommended that we have retroactive pay and for FY17 and 18 because of the pay was well below the 3%. And the challenge is, how are we supposed to, you know, look at the comparability to the private sector when pay for performance is all or nothing?
Mm-hmm.
If you do make it, most members are going to fall in the box four. And be honest with you, Bob, if you look at the pay offer we were given, FY19, they reduced the percentage in box four from 2% to 1.75. Now, the post office gave a 1% lump sum in box three.
Mm-hmm.
And as of the May numbers, there's about 10,000 EAS who are falling in box three will get a 1% lump sum. But that's not a pay increase.
No.
That doesn't go into your base, you know, and that impacts your pension in the future because you don't have an increase and it's not compounding. So here you have from box 4 through 15 in the FY19, the boxes, the percentages were lowered, but people in box 3 are going to get a 1% lump sum. I'm writing an article coming up, at, you know, robbing EAS to pay EAS. Basically, the post office took money from those in box 4 through 15 to compensate those in box 3.
Mm-hmm.
And still, box 1 and 2 is zero. You know, this isn't a true pay-for-performance system.
Now, I want to come back to the underlying principle here within the concept of the pay talks and the consult and the fact-finding panel. The intent of Congress and the lawsuit assumes that the Postal Service takes serious note of what the independent fact-finding panel, who are experts, concluded. If they ignore the fact-finding panel or only pay lip service to certain issues within the fact-finding, like, for example, the fact-finders make reference to creating these work groups to look at differential among others, but without any teeth to that work group, to have somebody in the room with them to guide the process, a mediator or some type of expert, is, you know, these work groups that the Postal Service are now sort of throwing out there possibly to sort of mitigate the damage of having ignored most of what the fact finders recommended. How successful can a work group be without someone from the outside looking in and making sure that both parties collaborate on a reasonable and just solution to the problem?
Well, Bob, in past pay talks or pay decisions, NAPS had, there were work groups supposed to be working on different issues. But again, it's the Postal Service and NAPS, and how you interpret Title 39 on giving NAPS full and fair consideration of our input. Are we directly participating in building? And like the panel said, you know, they recommended that you have a mediator or a pay compensation expert to help build on this because the post office didn't have that. And the post office response to the whole pay for performance system is that it in no way endorses the panel's findings. Now, if the post office just implemented the fact-finding report, we probably wouldn't be heading to court. The panelists recommended retroactive pay. Retro mentioned that our pay should go back to July 20th. The work group should have a mediator and our pay compensation expert. But then even the pay for performance system is flawed. So we would still be able need to fix the PFP system or
right.
The pay system.
The price, right. But that's something separate and apart from this that could be worked within a work group.
Right. But now, it's got to be changed.
Now, what's interesting also is the question some folks out there would ask, what has the Postal Service had to fear from an expert mediator sitting in on the work group? Why is that so objectionable?
I have no idea. I think you're looking at transparency. You're looking at putting out there that we're working as a team. NAPS is told we're part of the leadership team. We want to be an equal partner. We want to be a partner with the Postal Service. We're willing to work with the post office on this. But we can't continue to have a pay system that isn't going to compensate our members for working hard every day, getting the job done, with the you know, challenges they have with less resources, staffing challenges, you know, trying to get vehicles, so forth. Yes, the post office has said they have financial constraints. Again, to us, it was hard to believe when I was the witness for NAPS during fact-finding, when they asked me, don't you know that the post office is losing billions of dollars? And I basically told the panelists, I said, look, it's hard for NAPS to believe that when the post office is giving pay increases to the unions, cost of living, step increases, and regular pay increases in their contract, and the executive leadership is getting bonus money.
Interesting. And at least the last contract they signed with one of the labor unions was not through an arbitrator. It was a negotiated agreement that they weren't forced in any way to grant the increases. This was, by virtue of collective bargaining. And that's striking.
And what's very striking is that you want to attract and retain qualified EAS, and that's going to be done with pay. And a well-motivated workforce is going to be done with pay. When you look at the Postal Pulse surveys, the post office says when people are more engaged, they're more productive, they're safe, they're more safe. They also, their attendance is better. Just that alone, trying to get EAS more engaged, and one of it is the pay. I look at it as in the private sector, and I'll just throw this out. Let's say you're a manager of marketing and you have salespeople underneath you. And maybe your salespeople do well. But are they going to make more than the manager who's supervising them? No. In business, the people below you aren't making more than what you are as the manager directing. And as for what we're seeing here for our supervisors, they're supervising people who are making more than they are because of the way the SDA is. And even in for EAS, station manager or postmaster are making less than the supervisors. And you have higher-level managers, higher-level postmasters making less than their MCSOs, managers of customer service operations. These are things that if you want people to step up, attract and retain, and get people to move up, you've got to start compensating, looking at what they're doing. Because the jobs our members are doing, these are big business decisions they're having to make daily, and they should be compensated for that.
Yeah, one other issue is about retroactivity. We're dealing with a pay talks that sort of relate to 2016 to 2019. And again, I turn to the committee report that was accompanied the original bill. And it says in that language, the committee intends that the Postal Service's final determination on pay schedule and fringe benefits as they affect supervisors be retroactive to the effective date of the union contract referenced above, which is referring to the first contract that came after this legislation, obviously. So this seems to be pretty obvious that this pay talk, the 2016-2019, should be retroactive, correct?
Correct, Bob, because we can't help, NAPS can't help when the largest union settled, which was the NALC, in August of 17. That was our pay, I guess, talks, our agreement ended, started in FY16. So here we're already a year out behind. So by the time we do our discussion, we're 3 years out. And the post office wants NAPS to concede FY16, 17, and 18. Say, those years are gone. PFP is done. We're not going back. But we have a consultation for 4 years. Even in the – just because we didn't have an agreement, we still have a right to go back. And that's one of the other issues where the post office didn't even want to recognize that, though the fact-finding panelists did with suggested retroactive pay for FY17 and 18, and I think that would have been reasonable. But we're not even getting that. The post office really wants to look at a four-year pay package and do 1 year.
Now, last question, Brian. This has been 40 years we've been working under this outdated or outmoded pay consultation system. But during the years, for the most part, we haven't gone to court over the disagreements, if there were disagreements. What makes this, the 2019 lawsuit, unique? Why? What makes this time a unique time that we were compelled to go to court?
Well, Bob, I can only talk to when I got here in 2010 on as National Secretary Treasurer. We did go to fact-finding after we looked at what the pay package was with regard to the law, Title 39. And I think what NAPS has done a better job of is looking at the law more comprehensively to look at what does it actually mean and what is defined by making sure that the post office does adhere to providing us with a pay package that's comparable to the private sector, a differential that's reasonable, and a pay package that will attract and retain EAS and motivate the workforce. Sitting back and looking at this, we have seen over the years, like even when I was early on in back in Peoria as an EAS, I got cost of living, I got overtime. Cost of living is gone. Overtime is gone. What we're seeing is the pay increases have been dwindling. And we're noticing EAS are not getting pay increases at all. So when we're looking at, well, wait a minute, was that what the law was intended to do? Let's go back and look at comprehensively defining what is the law and how is the post office supposed to adhere to that. And we believe, based off of the current pay package we've been offered, the post office didn't adhere to the law in implementing a pay package to Title 39. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we would have liked to have been able to settle this. Now, again, we're still willing to talk to the Postal Service, but the way the decision was made and the fact-finding panel came back, I thought was very reasonable. Post office elected not to implement the fact-finding panel's report, the recommendations. So NAPS had to take the next step because we did exhaust what we felt was our process. We did consultation. We did fact-finding. We did fact-finding twice, and it's not working. The next step for us was to file the lawsuit.
So the next step is we're going to be awaiting for the Postal Service response to the filing of the lawsuit, which they have to file, which I think is within 30 days of our filing. So we probably, and then we will take it from there, correct?
Correct. I mean, what we'll do is just wait for the process to work itself out. It's going to take some time, but we're optimistic. We have a very strong case. We're going to be continually be optimistic that we'll be able to get a resolve to this for the members to get. All we're looking for is regular and consistent and fair and reasonable pay for our EAS members.
Well, I want to thank you for joining me today, Brian.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
Great. And we're going to, till next week, have a great weekend, everyone.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you. I'm going